All right, everybody, welcome to episode 8 of NPC Talk. My name is Chris, and today is July 11th, 2015. I don't think any exciting news has happened since the last episode, but we hope that you guys have enjoyed a little in-depth talk about Destiny. I had no idea what was going on, but it was pretty cool. I got to learn with you guys, if you guys didn't know. Anyway, today I have another very special guest, a friend I've known for a long time and played many games with, Mr. Josh. How are you today?
Terrible. I'm good.
Okay, that's good, because I don't want no angry guest on my cast for having a horrible day.
Thought your last guest would have been the angry one.
Be like, this is kind of uncomfortable. So, Josh, I don't know if you're familiar with the format of the show, but
I've been listening to every podcaster. Okay, go on.
Actually, I think you're my most faithful listeners. I don't know why I said that. But for first-time guests, we like to bring the top three on with them and ask, you know, what your top three is. So whenever you're ready, Josh, bring it on.
I thought I was supposed to ask you my history as a gamer.
Dang it!
Chris, let me run the show for you. So
shoot, today's an off day. Before you start, please let us know a little bit about yourself as a gamer.
I don't know as far as like years how long I've been playing, but I know I started with SNES back in the day when they released that with Super Mario World. Me and my brother got that, all about that.
A long time ago.
Yeah, it was like early 90s, whatever the heck that was. And yeah, pretty much were always Nintendo faithful. I had friends with PlayStation, so I never really seemed to need to get one. I always liked Nintendo more anyway. I'm trying to remember, I might have even played a bit before actually getting the Super Nintendo, because I remember my parents' family friends had like an original NES and all that. Plus cousins too, you know. So let's just say forever. I'm gaming forever.
Okay. Forever is a pretty long time.
Yeah.
I don't say so myself. Great. So I expect all Nintendo games. If I don't see any, I will be angry. I will be the angry one in this cast.
Josh. Wait, I think they all are all Nintendo games.
Alright. Yeah. Well, bring it on, Josh. What have you got?
Honestly, I don't know if these are my top three per se, but they're definitely three of my top 10.
Okay, yeah, top three is a very hard, it's a very hard decision to make, so.
I know, yeah, and I feel like, I don't know, it doesn't really reflect all the games I like to play, like, there's no racing games or anything, and I feel like I'm the only one out of our group of friends that really likes racing games. I mean, aside from Mario Kart, but that's not even real racing.
There are other racing games besides Mario Kart.
All right, so first game we'll start with probably gonna be Super Mario World 2 Yoshi's Island.
Ooh. Great game.
Yeah, I like everything about that game. It just feels very well put together. It's like everything's like all the art, the design of it, the story and mood is all very fun and playful and Yoshi and adorable. The music is adorable too. It's classic platformer.
So for those of you who don't know, Yoshi's Island is for the Super Nintendo and came out in 1995.
Oh, okay, Google that shit.
Yeah, you know it. And so, for those of you who don't know Josh, Josh is a very, I'm just going to call you out right now. Josh is a very artsy person. I don't know if you have, like, internet art or anything, but I've seen his work, like, personally, and it's pretty incredible. And so,
I should have internet art, but I don't, but...
Whenever we play together, Josh is always the one to notice, like, art style and, you know, the finer details of, like, little, art and animation and stuff. And I think Yoshi's Island is a great example of that kind of very special art.
Because they took that storybook look and ran with it.
Yeah, yeah. It was, I think it's like the first game that ever kind of had that kind of like, you know, kiddie like, animation.
Like an actual stylized look. Because, I mean, yeah, there's pixel art and all that, but it, like, I don't know. Definitely did have a design language to it.
Yeah, yeah. What I like about Yoshi's Island is it's very thematic. Like what Josh was saying, it has like that storybook feel. It runs
yeah,
with
yeah,
it.
That's the word.
It runs with it the entire game. Like you fight a boss and they still have like that storybook feel, and they have really creative gameplay too. But just like the way like things chase you, or like when you have like when you have to like save Mario from bubbling off your back or whatever. Like, the whole thing just feels like you're just being put through a storybook, and they did a really good job of kind of immersing you in that way.
Yeah, even, like, all the little, like, writing animations on, like, it looks like it's written on a chalkboard and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's super cute.
Yeah.
For gameplay, I don't know, did you like the gameplay, Josh? Like, in itself?
Oh, yeah, it's unique, you know, wasn't your typical Mario platformer, because, you know, added the whole flutter kick thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of when Yoshi came out into his own, like, into what Yoshi is now. It's like when they, because, you know, like, Smash Brothers, when you got the flutter kick and all that, so.
Mm-hmm.
Butt Slam. Was that the first Mario game with a ground pound?
No, the yellow Yoshi in Super Mario World 1 had the ground pound.
What, yellow Yoshi?
Remember in Mario 1, the red Yoshi could spit fire, the yellow Yoshi could ground pound, and then the blue Yoshi had wings?
I don't remember that. I remember the oh, that's right. No, it's with the shell that you ate, right?
I don't remember how the different colored Yoshis came about. I just remember they were there.
Oh, wait. I think green Yoshi, depending on the shell it ate, and then you're right, the Yoshi color. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah. Great mechanic, by the way. I like it. For Yoshi's Island, I just can't get over one of my favorite boss battles, literally of all time, is when you fight that raven dude.
Oh, on the planet?
On the planet.
Fucking Super Mario Galaxy?
Yeah. It was like Super Mario Galaxy in 1995.
I know, that shit was amazing.
For those of you who don't know, you're Yoshi, and you're on, like, a little moon, and the moon is pretty much like a wheel, and you're, like, running around it, and so I don't remember, like, the strategy behind it, but you have to ground pound, like,
the boss. Yeah, the boss is running around, and you've got to ground pound the pegs that are going through the planet into him.
Yeah, and I don't remember what made him hard at all, but I just remember it was really, like, unique in that way, because it was...
He started moving faster and stuff, you know?
Yeah. It was really unique, like, because the kind of like the whole screen kind of felt like it was spinning with the character, and so I don't know. It was super unique for its time, and that's just like one of the many examples of how Yoshi's Island was like extremely creative in terms of gameplay.
Yeah, they definitely were. I'm trying to think of other bosses offhand. When I think of bosses, I mean, for something that I never knew when I played the game, but with all the bosses, you know, you had Kamek, whatever the little wizard turtle's name was, come in and sprinkle his little magic juice on the... You'd do it onto a normal enemy that you run into, you know, throughout the game, but then it would turn big. And there's the Piranha Plant boss. It's like when you first run into it, you know, it starts off as a little, like, the little piranha plants are, like, super little, and then they turn into the big ones when you get close to them.
Right.
And you can kill them when they're little. But yeah, so that's like sitting in the boss room, and, you know, then Kimmy comes and he makes it big, jumps into the water and grows giant tentacles and all that shit. Yeah, apparently when the little Piranha Plant's just sitting there on the platform, you can throw an egg and just kill it before you even get into the room.
So really?
Like you get in there, you kill it, and then Kimmy is just like, oh, and leaves. And he's like...
Oh. What? Yeah, that's incredible.
It's like a super fucking crazy Easter egg. And like, they actually could, like, you know, game designers actually consider that. They're like, wait a minute, it might be possible for him to, like, you know, kill him. Either they put that in on purpose or they realized that and added that in after. Regardless, it was... I don't know, just kind of goes to show how much thought they put into the game overall.
Yeah. That Piranha Plant fight is also one of my favorites, just because I remember when you throw eggs, you can like bounce it on the water.
You have to bounce it off the wall and it skips along the water.
Yeah. I felt so like styling when I did it. It was like a really great feeling.
Oh man.
Also, continuing on to Yoshi's Island's creativity, do you remember the final boss at all? The giant baby Bowser?
Yeah.
That was, I think, like graphically one of like the most like amazing things I've seen when it was first released.
Definitely, yeah, because with the 2D plan, they like added a great sense of depth with how far baby Bowser / big old baby Bowser was.
Yeah.
And then, you know, slowly running, walking toward you and running toward you.
Yeah, they, because 3D wasn't, like, a thing yet back in the day. And so, just having the idea of it's still, like, a 2D platformer, but then Bowser is in the background, and he's running towards you. And so, normally you would throw eggs, like, left or right, but then this time you would throw them, you know, away from the screen, like, in a 3D area. And it was, like, really creative, because it was like, whoa, it was, like, the first... like feeling of an actual like 3D third dimension kind of thing. And so one of the many revolutionary things Yoshi Island did amazingly.
Grass Yoshi Island.
Also soundtrack.
Yes.
Yoshi's Island has an amazing soundtrack.
Super adorable.
Everything is, even like the scary levels, and let me tell you right now, scary level music is not my favorite because it scares me. But even the scary music in Yoshi's Island is adorable.
It's spoopy. Like, I wouldn't say it is because it's like trying to be spooky, but it's also cute. You're like, oh man.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Super spoopy.
3 spoopy 5 me, yeah.
Yeah, so they did a like really great job of you know, making the music feel like part of the game. Like, not, there are certain games where the music, it's good, but it doesn't integrate with the game, and I feel like the soundtrack for Yoshi's Island just integrated.
Yeah, it's cohesive with the rest of the design of the game. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those games that themed like a boss.
Yeah, super well put together. Definitely my favorite song off the soundtrack. I don't know which levels it's on specifically, but Athletic.
Athletic. Oh,
I don't know if you know that one offhand.
I do not.
I don't know if you can play that legally on here without...
I probably...
But anyway, viewers, go to YouTube. Yoshi's Island Athletic. It's there.
My favorite song is the intro, actually. I have it as my alarm.
Oh, the little storybook, like...
yeah.
Story time, like, yeah...
Do 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 do. That one.
Yes.
That's the most singing you'll ever hear from me.
That's a lie.
Yeah.
We'll play Drunk Rock Band on here someday.
Drunk Rock Band episode. That'll be something.
Oh man, honestly, I was considering putting Rock Band in my top 3, but just because of how much I've played it.
Rock Band's a great game.
It is, yeah, and I don't know, I just really like the drums. It's super fun. But I digress.
Sorry, I was listening to Athletic. I'm so sorry.
Oh, do they have that song in Rock Band? They should play it. Yeah, I don't know, anything else to... I'm trying to think of anything else to add about Yoshi's Island.
Mm.
Oh, one of the little details I like about is how each level, you're a different Yoshi. Because remember you're doing a little relay, so you like pass it off to a different colored Yoshi.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not the same one every game. It's like, oh man.
Yeah.
Another little detail.
Yeah, all the Yoshis play exactly the same, so it's not like, you know, you have to concentrate on that. But it was one of those things again where, like, fine attention to detail, of just like, hey, you know, it's the Yoshi family, not just the green dude.
Yeah.
Tossing the baby Mario around. Actually, my favorite part or, well, this is like the fifth time I'm saying this is my favorite part of the game, but one of my favorite parts of the game is when Baby Mario becomes Super Baby Mario.
Oh, when you get to, like, fly around?
Yeah. He's like Sonic, but not really. He's, like, invincible.
Now I am too fast.
He's, like, invincible, and he just runs around it. It was,
You get the little cape, like, in Super Mario World, right? You get to, like, parachute on that?
Yeah. It was just one of those things where, you're just, like, a super beast for, like, 30 seconds, and because it was, like, so uncommon and so fun, like, whenever it happened, it was just, like, an exhilarating 30 seconds.
Yeah, and they throw that in later in the game, right? You know, when you've had to fucking deal with Baby Mario crying and running away from it, and you're like, that's, like, the most stressful part of the game is Baby Mario whining in the top of the screen, knocked around. But, yeah, they add that later, and you're like, all of a sudden, you're like, oh, shit, Baby Mario's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess if I had to complain about the game, it would be Baby Mario crying loud.
At the same time, I feel like that adds to it. It's just like it makes it that much more stressful. You're like, oh god, I gotta get this kid.
It does, yeah. They did a good job of annoying the crap out of you.
Yeah. Because otherwise you wouldn't want it. You know, you wouldn't mind losing him.
That's true. Yeah, it definitely did add to the depth. I think, that's actually, like, an interesting thought, is that, some things that, like, isolated by itself is, like, a really annoying mechanic or really annoying concept, but when it's, like, built into the overall idea of the game, it becomes something that's, like, almost good.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you're a game developer, just because something's bad by itself doesn't mean it's bad overall.
Yeah, do for a reason. Yeah.
All right, man. Yoshi's Island. I love that game dearly. I have actually not played Yoshi's Story.
I don't think I ever played the whole thing. Because it was like, oh, Yoshi's are done with Mario. Now this is what Yoshi's do or something. I forget what it was.
Yeah, something like that. He had his own story.
Yeah. I understand. Nice one.
Yeah. Let's move on. What have you got next, Mr. Josh?
Let's see. I'm going to move on to a game that's been mentioned a couple times already on here. Perfect Dark.
Perfect Dark. Actually, you know, that's no one's actual top three.
I know. People mentioned it a lot because people brought up GoldenEye and whatnot. And of course, naturally, you mentioned that because it was pretty much the same thing, but I mean, arguably better in every way. Because they just took, like, the same exact formula from GoldenEye, but they developed their own IP with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, they just went crazy with it and, like, improved it. Especially the multiplayer.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, before it was just, you know, however many people you can get in front of the TV. Well, up to four, of course. but, yeah, they added, like, bots and, like, a whole bunch of different customization with all of it. Like, you can customize, like, what guns are in the map, all sorts of crazy shit. That's one of the reasons why I chose my top three. It's just, like, how much I played that, and, probably definitely got me started on, multiplayer in general, yeah. Well, yeah, no, but mostly the whole FPS thing.
Yeah.
I definitely played GoldenEye a bunch, but, yeah, it only gets so much fun when you're playing, you know, same group of friends, same maps, blah, blah, blah. but yeah, with Perfect Dark, like, I remember it was me, my brother, and one of my friends from... Oh, when did this come out? Was it...
Year 2000.
Okay, so it was middle school. Wait. Yeah, that was middle school for us.
For you, you
whatever.
Old fart.
Wait.
I'm older than he is.
By months. Yeah, and it was me, my brother, and a friend. We played far too much. We did three of us versus like a whole bunch of bots, and like they had a whole bunch of like different like kooky like AI for the bots. Like they had like Turtle Sim who would like, you know, was super defensive, and then there was like, I think there was, like, Peace Sim. He would go and disarm everybody because, you know, there's the melee option where you could punch people to disarm them.
Right.
So he would, like, go and, like, run around and fucking disarm people. Like, that's all he would do. There was, like... there's all sorts of like weird goofy ones, and then of course there's like the more difficult, like the perfect sim and the dark sim. So yeah, what we do, like we made like perfect sim, dark sim, and then like a whole bunch of weird like sims for all the name. Sims was the name of the AI, and there was like eight of them, I think. So it'd be like the three of us versus all of them, and we'd just be like put on these crazy fucking guns and different maps. And I remember, like, you know, yeah, they had Facility Felicity, whatever, from GoldenEye.
Yeah.
And there's like, you know, the rooms like way in the back, the big rooms with like the weird generator looking things or whatever. It's like you go down the hallway and there's the two rooms on the left and right.
Yep.
We'd like hide in those and like hunker down in there whenever fucking. Because we'd have like a couple of like insta kill guns and shit like that. So it was like super stressful, like, because you'd see guys running around, you're like, oh god, and you'd get killed.
So just to clarify, you like Perfect Dark for its multiplayer mostly. Like,
yeah, that's... so I got a little carried away with the multiplayer. Yeah, that's the main reason, but also the fact that like it took what was successful with GoldenEye, which was an original IP, because it was James Bond,
right?
But then they took that and they made their own, like their completely own IP with that, and you know, sure wasn't that successful of a franchise, but I think, like, you know, if you just look at that game, I thought it was really good. Like, they had a decent story with it. The single player definitely had a lot of playability to it. You know, had the same difficulty levels. You know, Agent, Perfect Agent. Or I forget what the difficulties were in that game.
I have no idea.
Yeah, but like in where you had like 00 Agent and whatnot, and GoldenEye.
Dark Agent. Was it Dark Agent?
I think it was, yeah. I think it was Perfect and Dark, yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like, that, you know, it had a decent story. It was entertaining enough to play through the whole story. And then you're able to do a co-op, too. Co-op split screen.
For single player?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, the entire campaign you're able to do co-op, yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. I totally don't remember that.
Yeah, it had its, like, it, I think they made a pretty, you know, decent little universe with it. Futuristic, a lot of fun guns, a lot of unique guns.
Yeah. yeah.
Like the fucking, like the Cyclone, the gun that, like, you, it's like the credit card gun. I don't even remember, it's the orange gun. It's a little SMG, but in order to reload it, you like slides a like long, like, it looks like a super long credit card essentially. And it, like, just slides through it. It just passes right through and out.
I don't remember that. It's reloaded.
And it's, like, alternate fire was, like, it just unloads the entire clip. There's so many ridiculous guns, but it's so much fun.
All right. Since we're talking about the guns, I gotta give my 2 cents.
Yeah.
My favorite 2 guns was the laptop gun.
Yeah.
Which is this... It's basically a turret. And, when you press fire, you throw your laptop onto, like, a wall or a railing.
Well, you could run around with it as a gun. Like, you know, you could shoot with it normally.
Could then... you? I never done that.
Never. Well, I mean, of course, you want to save all your ammo for the turret. But also, we should probably mention, if people don't know about Perfect Dark, that every gun has, like, the alternate fire. It's like there's a standard firing mode, and then there's, like, the secondary fire mode on every gun.
I totally don't remember that either.
Yeah, that's how it, like, it's how about the Cyclone, the like in full magazine discharge, the laptop gun turns, you throw it as a turret, sticks to walls.
Mm.
Yeah,
so that was like, it was like one of those things. In GoldenEye, I would have, you know, like proximity mines laid out all over to to wreck noobs.
I think I remember that playing with you.
But in Perfect Dark, it just upgraded from proximity mines to laptop guns. I would just throw all the laptop guns I could into, like, one room, and then just...
Don't worry, proxy mines were still there. We're still there.
Yeah, they were still there. I remember that, too, but laptop guns were more styling, so... So I used that. I also really liked the Farsight.
Do you remember? Yeah, the railgun?
Yes. I think it was a railgun. I just remember... I mean,
it essentially was. You could shoot through walls.
Yes, you could... You press R to aim your cursor, and then once you do that, you literally, like, see through walls, and you can see, like, I don't know, like the infrared kind of like other characters.
It's a weird walls. Like infrared x-ray looking thing.
Yeah. Like color kind of people silhouettes. And then literally if you see them, you just aim through all the walls and then just like hit them and they just die. It was so not balanced. But I loved it. It was great.
Oh yeah, that gun was not that, especially because I think it's alternate. It was like alternate fire was, it would look for people, like it would auto aim to
people.
So like you can just like hide in the back of the map and doom, like you'd hear it because like it was so loud and you'd hear it throughout the map. You'd hear doom when someone, you see someone die and you're like, well, fuck. And the worst was when like I don't think the AI abused it that much as far as shooting through walls and whatnot. Which is good, because that'd be unfortunate if you're just like, where am I getting killed from?
Like the AI, because like, they know where you are anyways.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Just like shoots. Yeah, Perfect Dark, I think, as a game overall, I think, to me, Perfect Dark was the game that, the Nintendo 64 was like, first of all, was like the console to get. At its time, it was, the PlayStation was there, but, like, the Nintendo 64 was really, like, flourishing. It was by far the most popular system, and, like, it had all these great games coming out. But Perfect Dark was, like, the game that really pushed the Nintendo 64, like, I think to its limit. And, it felt like the game where, when I was playing it, I'm like, dude, there's so many features, like, the graphics were really good, but... the frame rate kind of sometimes were inconsistent or choppy, and then sometimes, like, the graphics would be, like, a little muddy, and you would know, like, oh, like, this is kind of where the N64 needs to, you know, take its next step, or Nintendo would need to take its next step to the next system, because Perfect Dark really, like, gameplay, options, like, everything really pushed it to its limit.
The earlier games that required the expansion pack?
Yeah.
Little memory expansion?
Yeah, there was a... Nintendo 64 had a expansion pack, and Perfect Dark required it to play. I think the only games that required it was DK64, Perfect Dark, and Majora's Mask.
Did Majora's Mask require it? Yeah.
Pretty sure.
Oh, man. I thought it was, like, from, like, 16 to 32 megabytes of RAM, but it went to... The original... Yeah, it went from 4 megabytes to 8 megabytes of RAM.
Damn. Shoot, that's a lot of RAM. That's crazy. I mean, my computer only has, you know, 32 gigabytes, so...
get wrecked, Scrub.
Josh, do you remember the campaign at all? I remember it was really good, but I don't really have specific memories.
Yeah, I played it a lot. it's pretty fun. Like, you start, it's like similar concept where you know some sort of agent, and some, I don't know, future MI6 thing or something. But yeah, you start out just like researching, just trying to like infiltrate some companies, seeing what the hell is going on, and then eventually like aliens start getting introduced, and then you actually do go onto like alien ships and whatnot.
Oh, so,
yeah, you go to like Area 51, you meet the little gray alien dude.
The Elvis.
Yeah, Elvis. Yeah. Dude, the best was playing, actually, it was the best and the worst playing him in multiplayer, because you're shorter than everybody, but your head was gigantic.
Yeah.
So you can't headshot it so easily. Oh, good. That was fun, yeah. Yeah, Elvis was adorable. But yeah, and then they had like all the alien guns. Yeah, like the Farsight was, and they had the little Phoenix, the little pistol that shoot explosives, like little mini explosive rounds. And then they had the weird whatever Skedar aliens, I think they're called, because there was like the Mr. Blonde guy that like was a transforming alien.
His name sounds familiar.
Mr. Blonde, he's like the super tall, like Eastern European looking guy in like a big white trench coat.
Right.
Talking the deep voice. Yeah.
He's totally an alien.
Exactly, yeah. yeah, like the alien weapons were fun. Like the, remember the Scudder had like a rocket launcher that, its alternate fire was a radio controlled rocket.
Oh.
So you shoot it and it goes into like a little first person flying mode. It was That was the fucking best.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, of course, you're standing still the whole time, but that was, like, the most fun, like, flying around the hallways, and then, like, someone turns the corner, you're like, oh, shit, blow up on him, and then...
Yeah, there would be, like... I remember you could use it in, like, single player, like, very rarely.
Yeah.
But, like, they would have it, and you would just, like, hide in the farthest corner, and just shoot your little missile, and then you could, like, yeah, you would be in the missile's perspective. And then you would just kind of, like, fly around and, like, dodge people until you find, like, one sucker in the hallway. And you're just like, this guy is my target. And he just blows up.
So dead. Yeah, that game did have a lot of unique guns in it, yeah.
Yeah. I think really what made the game so great was, I mean, besides everything, was definitely, like, the different, like, variety of everything that was included, like weapon choices, multiplayer mode, like single player missions and all that. Like everything was so like they were so creative that you're like, I can shoot this guy like this, or I can, you know, use a different gun. And it was just like endless hours of fun.
Really was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I remember one of the guns, the tranquilizer gun. Do you remember that? Like one of the things with Perfect Dark was, if you get punched or certain guns would, like, distort your vision, so you get, like, a lot of trailing effect.
Oh, okay, okay.
What was I looking for? Like, everything, yeah, we get all, like, blurry, fuzzy, whatever looking, and, the tranquilizer gun, like, would screw up your vision a lot. and then its alternate fire was, like, the lethal injection. Yep, so it was, like, you have to be right next to the person to do it, but, yeah, you'd pretty much just, like, unload your whole clip, and it was, like, just, a lethal injection, so just insta-kill him.
Hey, really?
Yeah, it was...
I don't remember that at all. That's hilarious.
It's super fun and super goofy.
Yeah,
another game that definitely seemed like it had a lot of work put into it, a lot of thought, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I really feel like... I don't know, when I was playing through the game, I remember, like, in the year 2000, playing through the game and going, like, this is an amazing game, but I wish whatever the next system was, this game would also be on it, so it could be smoother, the graphics would be, like, more, not so blurry or whatever.
But then Perfect Dark Zero happened.
Perfect Dark Zero. What system was that for?
Xbox? I think this was a platform release, wasn't it?
I'm not sure. I just remember, like, I was like, it's not the same. Yeah, for the campaign, I just remember there was this one level. I'm pretty sure it was Perfect Dark, where it's called the Foyer, and I would just, like, I don't remember what was so hard about it, but...
Foyer. I'll remember that in Perfect Dark.
I think I
have... That sounds familiar for an old shooter, though.
Yeah. I don't remember what was hard about it. I just remember dying all the time.
Is that one of the James...
Okay. Because we got into it, I have to know more about Perfect Dark Zero. So Perfect Dark Zero came out in 2005 on the Xbox 360.
Yeah, it was a launch title.
And, it's developed by Rare, which is the same people that develop regular Perfect Dark. And it is a prequel to the Nintendo 64 game, so it's not a remake. It is, I guess, a sequel prequel. And, it was under development for 5 years. So, I never played it. I never had an Xbox, personally, but I think if I... had an Xbox, I would get it, but to be honest, when the game came out, like, it didn't get that much steam for whatever reason, right?
I can't remember if it was because of the Xbox's, like, weird, you know, launch. I remember when people making up that, because you what was it called, 360, because you turn 360 degrees and walk away. There were all the stupid memes on it. Of course, you know, 360 degrees would turn you right back toward it, so you have to moonwalk away.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, I can't remember if, I don't know, it might have been too much maybe Perfect Dark was riding on too much nostalgia, too much, you know, rose-tinted lenses. I don't know. I played Perfect Dark a little bit recently. It's still enjoyable, I think. But, yeah, I think it just really was a bad remake, because that started when Rare started, you know, doing terrible things, right?
Yeah. Rare was on its downfall.
Yeah.
And I think we talk about Rare a little bit in episode 4 on the E3. So guys, check that out. But I think also Halo being on the Xbox, like having done FPS in Perfect Dark, it was like, oh, Perfect Dark's really cool. But in 2005, like what was really popular was like Halo multiplayer and like the whole like, you know, connecting your Xbox and stuff going on. So it was kind of just a bad time for Perfect Dark to come out. But I don't know if you guys ever played it. Let me know. It seems like a really cool game from what I'm looking at.
I think last one episode you guys were talking about games released by Rare. Did you guys mention Jet Force Gemini? Did you ever play that?
I love that game.
Dude, that game is so fucking good. It's like I've played a bunch. Like I played a ton of it. I like accidentally stole it from one of my friends. He left it over. He never got it back. I still have it. And yeah, like it just feels like it has like the longest campaign ever.
Yeah, it was so good. For those of you who don't know, Jet Force Gemini is a third-person shooter. So
yeah,
you're behind the character, but you still have like a cursor, and then you know you would run and gun, and then when you aim, I think your character becomes transparent.
Yeah, like it goes behind you. Yeah.
Yeah, so you kind of see your cursor and you destroy things, and it was a really well-made game that it wasn't super popular, but I mean it was pretty well known for being a great game. The only complaint for Jet Force Gemini is to beat the game, you're pretty much required to 100% it, because you had to gather, I don't remember what you had to gather, but you had to gather all these things, and like throughout the game it kind of seemed like, oh, you know, it's just a bonus for 100% in the game, but then towards the end they're like, no, you have to get them all to like go into our ship for the final level or whatever.
Yeah.
But besides that, it was a great game.
Yeah, I think what's cool is the three unique characters that you get, like how they're all, all the characters, like you know, the three separate characters have like their own kind of three separate campaigns, you know?
Oh yeah, yeah.
They have their own like string of levels, you know. You got the guy, the girl, and the dog Rufus, I think.
Oh, the dog!
And like he starts off like running around normally, eventually he turns into a little tank dog.
Yeah,
it's like the most ridiculous shit ever. You're like, yes.
Oh yeah, oh man, nostalgia,
man. Throw back right there for y'all.
Yeah, but to keep this going, Josh, awesome top two so far. What have you got to close out?
This is terrible. I actually just thought of another game that, oh man,
top four.
I don't know.
What? Okay.
Real quick, let me just mention, this is definitely probably in my top 10. We won't get into it. Another game with great mood, great design and all that. Dead Space?
I have not played it.
Oh, God. We'll talk about Dead Space sometime.
Okay.
We'll figure out a reason to talk about Dead Space.
I've heard that Dead Space got, like, really, really good reviews, but, I don't know anything about it, but it seems great.
The first game, yes. The second game was like, you know, it had to be a little, you know, gimmicky just to like, because it can't. There's like, there's a lot about Dead Space that's kind of like a, you know, a one-time thing. It's like the, you know, it had to be the first in its, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the third one, I think, was terrible. I don't know. I'll remember. but yeah. Yeah. So we'll talk about it another time. So. Last game, though, also on N64, Majora's Mask.
Ooh, oh man, okay. Alright, before you start on Majora's Mask, which I have lots of great things to say about, we will have an episode with, I know Nathan's mentioned our friend Parker, but
yeah,
with Parker...
I'm feeling if Parker's listening to this, he's gonna be like, God damn it, 'cause we were probably deliberating on the same one, I know him and I, we both love Wind Waker and Majora's Mask.
Mm, great.
So, yeah, like, deciding between those two was really hard.
Yeah, we will have an episode solely on, like, the Zelda franchise and the way it's developed and why certain games we really like and certain games we don't. But Majora's Mask, hit it to us, Josh.
Yeah, this actually kind of, this is good. It kind of goes off two things of the last, of my first two games. The whole design mood kind of theme of it, and then the fact that it took, you know, its predecessor and then made it different, better, whatever, in a way. I mean, people will argue whether or not it's better than Ocarina of Time, but whatever. Yeah, so one of the things I like most about Majora's Mask is like how solid of a theme and mood it has. It's like honestly, when you think about it, it's a super depressing game.
Yeah, really dumb.
Like not just the fact that, you know, the world is ending and all that, just like everyone's individual stories are like, oh god, like each mask that you get, like the masks that transform you.
Right.
I'm sure, I mean, if you want to explain whatever about the game.
I don't remember like the story behind each mask. I just remember when you put on the mask, you have to watch this really scary cinematic for like 5 seconds, and I always skipped it because I couldn't handle how scary it was.
Like Link's goofy.
Yeah, so scary. What do you mean goofy? Oh my gosh,
it was creepy. especially because like you have no pupils whenever it shows your face transforming.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, transform you into whatever race you put on the mask. But yeah, like each time you got the mask was like from some other character dying, essentially. Like this is probably spoilers, but I mean, if you haven't played the game, what's wrong with you? You deserve to be spoiled.
Well, okay, we got spoilers so far, so we're just gonna roll with it. But yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't really want to skip, you know, a couple minutes, but anyway, like, first of all, when you get turned into a Deku scrub, it's like, when you first get turned in the beginning, you're kind of like, what the hell is going on? Eventually you run into, you know, a little decrepit-looking tree, right before you get to the clock tower, which, you know, when you eventually get to the swamp, and meet, like, the whole, you know, all the Deku scrub, whatever, people... And it ends up being the butler's kid that was, like, I don't think he figured that out until the very end. Where, like, everyone's like, yeah, reuniting and whatnot.
I don't think I ever knew that.
Yeah, like, you do remember in the beginning when you're chasing after the Skull Kid as a Deku Scrub. You see the little tree.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, Tattle, whatever the little Navi is called. It says something about, like, whatever, sad face. Yeah, that, that's whatever you got the power to turn into from. Yeah, it was Deku Scrub, which was the butler and the royal Deku Scrubs. It was, like, his kid or something. Because at the end of the game, you see him, like, groveling over it or whatever.
Huh.
Because, you know, you're like, oh, yeah, I beat the game, but of course it's still depressing.
Yeah, actually.
Yeah, and then, yeah, with, like, all the other masks, like, with the Zora, you know, he play, which is awesome, he, you know, plays his last song.
I remember that.
And then he dies, and then you get his face, you know, casual. yeah, so that game was very thematically designed very well. A lot of death.
Yeah.
A lot of sadness. One detail that I like, the music. So the music before you clear each area, before you cure whatever area from the temple, the evil magic from the temple, like each area has the same song, but different instruments, like different style.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't even know how to describe, you know, but you know what I'm talking about, right? When you go like the Woodfall, when you go to the Great Bay,
yeah,
like the music's all the same, but it's just I don't know. I thought that was a really cool detail because they sound like very distinctly different, but they're exactly the same song.
You know, I don't know if I ever noticed that. I think in Nathan's podcast, we mentioned that I don't notice patterns very well.
That's right.
I ever noticed that. That's amazing.
Yeah, go listen to all the songs, especially like, I think they all sound super cool, especially the Icona Valley one. It's like super creepy.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
Yeah, that's, I think one of the things I did well is like, I felt like that kind of almost built up to Icona Valley. Because, you know, that's the last area you go to.
Right.
And that whole area was, like, just super creepy looking and then creepy sounding. And that temple, Stone Tower Temple, that was, like, a super awesomely designed temple, too. Awesomely is a new word. that temple was designed really well. Like, the fact that, you know, you go through it and you're like, oh, shit. Now I'm going to turn the whole place upside down and go through it again.
Oh, that's right.
You remember that? Yeah, you hit the sun with the light arrow, I think, and yeah.
That is, yeah. I remember playing through that temple, and because you would kind of see, as you go through the temple for the first half, you would kind of see, like, little, like, weird puzzles on the ceiling, and you're like,
what is that? Like, I should be able to stand on that, but it's on the ceiling.
Yeah, you're like, why is there, like, a button up there? Like, how am I supposed to get that? And then everything flips over, and you're like, whoa, this temple was built to be upside down. Like, pretty cool.
That was pretty awesome, yeah.
So, how did you like the gameplay?
I mean, it's, as far as, like, core mechanics, it's the same as, you know, Ocarina of Time. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely familiar and, you know, easy. And then the whole time travel thing, the whole, like, 3-day time span, it's, like, that just kind of, you know, engrossed you that much more in the game, because, immersed you, because, you know, you're constantly, like, thinking about how much time you got, so then everything, you know, seems fleeting. It's, like, even if you, you know, you beat a temple, and, you know, you clear an area, you're like, oh, man, the swamp's back to normal. Oh, it's day 3, got to go back. And then you go back to the swamp, and it's back to, you know, back to being all mucked up again. So
the time mechanic from Majora's Mask is probably one of the coolest mechanics, like in any game, really. Because, so how it worked is, you have 3 days before the moon crashes onto the earth and everyone dies. NBD.
Casual.
Yeah. And so, during those 3 days, you learn the, or sorry, in the beginning of the game, pretty much, you learn the Song of Time, which lets you go back, to the beginning. There's actually a bunch of songs, like, that can, like, fast forward time, slow down time, and stuff, but
yeah,
essentially,
the song of double time and reverse time, yeah.
Yeah, and so, essentially, the game runs between those 3 days for the whole game, and you're time traveling back and forth. And so what's really cool about the game is that, well, first of all, as Josh was saying, thematically, the whole game is depressing, chaotic, you know, like, catastrophic even. And it's like, you know, everyone feels like, you know, the world is ending and stuff. And so with that, like, really, like, dark theme also comes along with this stress of, like, you know, everything is going to end at the end of these 3 days, and so you're constantly feeling like you're on your tippy toes, like, the entire game, because you're not just, like, casually, like, you know, running across a field for no reason, but time is always ticking, and so you're always kind of like that feeling really adds to, like, the darkness of the theme. Yeah, go ahead.
Plus, with that whole mechanic, like, all the side quests that are completely dependent on schedules and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that just adds, you know, a whole nother level. Like, you think with only, I mean, what, Ocarina of Time had 3 temples as a kid, and then 7 as an adult? 6?
7. 7.
And then this one, Majora's Mask, only has 4 total, but, like, some of the side quests are, like, so in-depth. Like, the whole quest line to get the couple's mask.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm pretty sure you gotta, like, get a couple masks before you actually go on that quest. And, like, you just have to, honestly, that, like, you can do it without a guide, because, like, you can kind of, like, watch people throughout town and kind of figure out their schedules and whatnot, but, like, some of the stuff is just, like, so hard. Like,
it was, it's
kind of brutal, too, with having to be, like, somewhere on time. It's like, if you miss that slot, then it's like, well, gotta start over. You're like, shit.
Yeah, that whole event, it was an event of these two couples who you have to do certain things to get them to meet and then, like, fall in love and whatever in the...
Well, they've already fallen in love, but, like, they... Yeah.
Oh, I don't remember. They had to
meet... I forget the exact story of it, yeah, but it's like you wouldn't even know, like, just casually going through the game that they were at all related.
Yeah, yeah, and then... But it's like this giant side quest where you go through all 3 days of, like, meeting them at certain spots to do something, and then, like...
delivering messages and letters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's really, really cool. And I used a guide, because there's no way.
It was going super hard. And then, of course, it ends on the third day, like, in the final hours of the game, and you're like, you know, the town's falling apart, and they're just like, oh, we're happy together, and you're like... I'm going to go back in time now.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. That was actually really, really cool. It was actually sad.
Like, when we spend our final moments together, it's like, oh, that's depressing.
Yeah, yeah. The whole game was built around these 3 days. So as Josh was kind of saying earlier, there would be something where, like, in day one, you know, like, the swamp wouldn't be as high as in day three, so you can only do... like, certain parts on certain days, and I don't know, the whole, like, mechanic of, like, having to manage time while going through a entire Zelda game, it was really well done.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of you not noticing patterns and time changing, did you notice the clock tone, the music, how it changes each day? You noticed that, right?
I did notice that, yes.
Yeah, because that one's kind of obvious, yeah. Like, I like kind of like how it starts off kind of like light-hearted, cheery, whatever you look up. There's a moon way up, you're like, okay. And then, like, as it gets later in the days, it gets more and more. They, like, you know, layer on more to it and make it sound, like, more foreboding. You're like, oh, good.
Yeah, yeah. So, I gotta ask, and we bring on the tough questions here on this show.
Hard-hitting questions?
Hard-hitting questions. Why Majora's Mask over Ocarina of Time?
It's got so much more theme to it. Mm-hmm. I think that's what they focused on with that game. It, like, kind of makes sense because Ocarina of Time was a huge project in and of itself because, you know, the last game before that was, what, Link to the Past?
Yep.
P.S., that's, like, I love that. I was considering that, too, but, yeah, that game... one of my favorite Zeldas too. Anyway, to make that jump to 3D, it's like it was completely different. I think with that one, they just, like, focused on, like, content and, like, trying to, like, work out different puzzles in 3D, like how to translate the whole franchise, whole genre into 3D.
Yeah, yeah.
And then with Majora's Mask, they had all that groundwork laid out.
Mm.
So they're kind of able to focus on different aspects, you know. They add some new gameplay elements with the time and whatnot. Plus, they're, you know, they just brought way more story and, like, way more theming and whatnot.
Mm.
And a lot more emotion in it.
Yeah, yeah, they did. The dark emotion, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the fun things. Yeah, is that how? I mean, it's like, yeah, there's some dark stuff, you know, in other Zelda games too. Like, especially, you know. Ocarina of Time, you know, the fact that Ganon takes over Hyrule and everything, you know, gone to hell.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you go away 7 years. Thanks a lot, Link. But yeah, it's just, like you said, I like to notice a lot of, like, design, theming, whatnot, you know, the art of it, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why I like that one more. That's why Wind Waker was also considered for.
Ooh, I love Wind Waker.
Because, yeah, that one wasn't as big as a jump as Ocarina of Time either, because, I mean, they already had the 3D kind of figured out, but they still, you know, they changed the feel of it a lot. It's definitely similar, like, controls, you know, same controls and all that. whatnot, but that animation style that, like, everyone hated at first.
Yeah, yeah.
When I saw that, I was like, oh, that looks cool, and then, like, playing it more, and then especially with, was it Wind Waker Remastered or HD, Wind Waker HD on Wii U?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
God, that game looks so gosh darn pretty.
I've only seen videos of it, but I haven't played the game myself, but the game looks amazing on the Wii U.
It is really nice, yeah, because, like, that game did age well, because, you know, it's simple enough graphics that, like, it's, like, sure, aliasing and all that, and it looks all grainy and whatnot, but it still looks good. But then they went and made it, you know, that much smoother, that much cleaner, and then added, you know, more pretty lighting effects and special effects and particle, etc., and just made it prettier.
Yeah.
Plus, they added selfie camera, which was hilarious.
Did they really?
Yeah, because now you get the camera in the game. You can you can flip it around and hold it in front of you, so you can take selfies. Dude, there's a whole Twitter that called, like, Linkstagram. It's not active anymore. But someone was going through the game and just, like, goofing around and, like, playing as Link to taking selfies.
I had no idea. That's hilarious.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's just, if you go to, like, at Linkstagram, let me see if that, make sure that's it, because it, yeah, at Linkstagram, yeah. It's just him going through, yeah, it's just him going through and, like, taking random selfies. It's delightful, it's hilarious.
This picture I'm looking at is, like, Link freaking out as, like, this lava is exploding in the background.
I know, it's the best. It's like he takes all these pictures with, like, inappropriate times. Also, oh god, why is this one in GTA 5? Also, what I was about to say. Oh yeah, they added the whole, like, social aspect of it. Because they had Miiverse with the Wii U, and you can take pictures and post them to the Miiverse.
Mm-hmm.
And wherever you post them in game, you throw out a little Tingle message bottle.
Okay.
And that'll land, and that'll go into other people's games.
Oh, really?
And you can go and pick up other people's message in a bottle, like, and it's their pictures. And it's hilarious. And, like, I played a bit of it with Parker, and, like, we're just going around. Do you remember the weird birds that were, like, eagle things, like vultures? Yeah, they're like vultures in the game.
Yeah.
That, like, made the super, like, weird, like,
yeah.
Like, I took a whole bunch of retarded, like, goofy pictures of those birds, and just, like, I would just make close-up pictures of the face of the bird, and, like, the text would just say, like, WWNNNNGGGH, like, my best, you know, recreation of the noise that they make. And I was just throwing those around randomly everywhere. It's actually a lot of fun. Like, I got some yas on the Miiverse. Some thumbs up, some likes, you know.
Okay.
It was funny. It was good fun. It was like, it's a completely single player game, but they added that little tiny, like, social aspect of it. It was delightful.
Man, I could go on forever about Wind Waker, which.
Wind Waker. Oh, no, my bad. I'm digressing here.
That's okay. Whatever. Yeah, Wind Waker and A Link to the Past are my two favorite Zeldas. And Wind Waker, it was very controversial as a game, and mm-hmm. We'll get into it. I promise. But
yeah, we definitely need Parker. I mean, first of all, we need him to get his top three, and then we need to do Zelda.
Yeah, there's a. There's a lot to say about Zelda.
Was, yeah, because he's played all of them, I'm pretty sure. Actually, has he played all of them? I don't know if he's played the first two.
One and two.
I'll figure that out.
Link's Adventure. The Adventure of Link.
So good. So based.
Yeah.
I haven't played, like, I haven't, don't, you know, kill me, but I haven't played all of Twilight Princess, and I did not play any of what's it called, Skyward Sword.
Actually, I'm the same. I played half of Skyward Sword, and then I didn't play all of Twilight Princess.
Yeah, I really do want to play Twilight Princess though, because it's a very unique design and mood to that one too.
Yeah, It got mixed reviews as well, from what I remember.
Yeah. I forget why I stopped playing it. I had a Wii. I felt like I just stopped playing it for a while for various reasons.
Yeah, life.
Yeah, exactly. I think my brother got a 360 or something. I too much Halo.
Yeah.
Too much Wrecking Scrubs on the Xbox.
You know, when you first mentioned the Deku Scrub, I thought you were calling him like a scrub. Like a scrub is a Deku. And I was like, that's inappropriate, but he's actually called the Deku Scrub.
that dead scrub, you know, he dies to you know, the Skull Kid, fucking scrub.
Yeah.
Stupid. Get good.
Scrub. Yeah, I'm gonna start calling people Deku Scrubs instead of just scrubs.
So good.
So yeah, Josh, I really enjoyed that all three of your games are, well, Perfect Dark's kind of Nintendo. We'll call it Nintendo exclusive just because Perfect Dark itself just came out in the 64. But you got your faithfulness in check, and I really like the thematic and the artfulness in all the games that you've chosen.
Yeah, I did want to include something, like, I did want to try and include something more modern and not just do all nostalgia, but that's, I mean, I probably, if I thought about it, I don't know why I didn't think about Dead Space before.
Yeah.
But I might have replaced Perfect Dark with it, because it, just, like, really quickly on Dead Space, like, it's a very well-designed game, too, like, the gritty graphics, like, it's, you know, very gory, of course, game's all about dying in space. It's about a dead guy in space.
Oh. I see.
No, he's not actually dead.
Okay, I have no idea, so...
No, that's not accidental spoilers. He's not actually dead. But anyway, yeah, it's like it was a very unique... It had unique gameplay with the whole, like, dismembering thing. Like, the fact that there's hardly any, like, actual... There's, like, only a couple actual guns, and the rest are all, like, weird. Like, your first gun... It's a mining gun. It's like a mining tool that shoots like little whatever cutting. Plasma cutter. That's what it's called.
And okay.
Yeah, yeah, it's all about dismembering things.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's unique gameplay, and then plus, you know, it's survival horror that was like done really well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I should check it out, actually.
Yeah, I think I actually. I don't know if they still have it. Origin, I feel like. I don't know if it's still free or if it was one of their on the house games. Like I got Dead Space for free on there, so
darn it.
Yeah. It's good. Otherwise it's cheap. Do I have the game? I don't know if I do. On Xbox.
Yeah, but I mean, there are still really good games that come out today, but it's really hard to come out to what's it called? Compare them to a lot of the classics. Like, back in the day, just because, like, there was so much, like, more, like, technological creativity, you know? Like, going from 2D to 3D, like, that was, like, insanity back then. But then now, like, maybe from 3D to virtual reality. But, like, the 3D space has so many, like, options for you to make a game that it's... You have to be creative in different ways, so...
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, a lot of genres seem, like, pretty laid out, you know? There's all, like... FPSs, everyone knows what to expect, so, like, I feel like a lot more people, or developers can focus a lot more on, like, you know, theming and story and design and all that good stuff now.
That is the stuff that Mr. Josh likes.
Yeah, I mean, fucking, what's it coming out, the, Division. It's like, that game looks pretty cool. It's like, yeah, this is a, you know, another shooter, but, you know, it looks like it's got a cool thing going on. Saw that E3, the, like, isn't that the MMO one? All right, I'm going too far into other
I don't
topics
know.
Now.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm going to start rambling on about other games.
Oh, you mean Tom Clancy's The Division?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, because when I searched Division, I got the, you know, mathematical...
No, that's what I'm talking about. Division, it seems like you can do a lot with that.
Yeah.
Bro, let's talk about integrals. Integrals is probably my favorite math concept. Top three math concepts.
Top three math concepts. Maybe in a different podcast. Okay, yeah, really quick, let's talk about Division.
You actually want to? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, let's do it. Okay, so Division
You didn't talk about it in your E3, did you?
I did not.
Because was it announced E3 last year?
It was announced it was E3 last year, correct?
Yeah, and then they brought out more fleshed out gameplay and whatnot now.
Yeah. So, for those of you who don't know, Tom Clancy's games are generally like army dude, people, squad.
Shooter sims, they're very real, they're always realistic.
Yeah, it's all about like, you know, being like the, like, saving people from like a terrorist attack. And you are, yeah, it's very realistic. You know, you're
realistic as far as putting a rifle scope on a shotgun, which is what Jeremy did when we and played Rainbow Six Vegas. Because you can do that, and it works.
I actually did not know that. But yeah, it's all about, like, being, like, it's kind of like Counter-Strike, but Rainbow Six usually went for more, like, co-op or, like, campaign kind of thing.
And it was all about going into cover. Like, you can, peek around corners. Like, you either peek around corners or do blind fire around corners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of like, yeah, peeking and, like, being safe and stuff. You know, hiding around corners. But in The Division, the new Tom Clancy game that's coming out, it is, from what I remember, a multiplayer game. And they're going for, like, a more Counter-Strike.
It's persistent still. Online world, right?
Is it?
I think so. I think it is a little. I think it's a little combo MMORPG with shooter. Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea.
I don't know if it's third person only or first person. I think it's third person only. Yeah. But yeah, like, you're able to level up skills and whatnot. I think that's what they introduced. What they mentioned this E3 was like. There's that quarantine zone in the middle. It's like the outer area. I'm guessing you're probably just like, I don't know if that's because they had players go into a like separate zone.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's where like shit can go down with other players. But like you can probably invite people into like stuff outside, and then the middle is like free for all kind of thing. Because that's what they demoed in the E3 was, like, the group of people, they went in, you know, they did their little mission, they found, like, some group of people, like, they're like, oh, shoot, should we see what loot they got, and, like, you know, they killed those people.
Right, I remember.
Like oh, man, like, all right, let's heal this guy and get out of here, and, like, their third friend was like, nope, like, left the group, killed them, took their shit and left.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that goes, yeah. Because, I mean, you know, games these days never should finish, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Yes. But we will probably talk about this game when it comes out.
Yeah.
Because right now it's still in, like, the early stages of development, so.
Yeah, I'm excited for that and the other Tom Clancy game. The classic Tom Clancy-looking game. what was the other one? I think they just announced the name for it this E3, like the actual name for it.
Is it Rainbow Six Siege?
Yeah, Siege. Okay, it was a Rainbow Six game. That's right. Yeah, Rainbow Six Siege. Yeah. Did you see anything with that? It's just like
I did not.
The big thing about it is like the whole destructible environments. It's like, you know, houses have drywall. When you shoot drywall, it's gonna crumble. So you're able to like blow out walls and stuff. And you can place charges to, like, blow up walls and floors and stuff.
Okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, looks pretty neat.
Alright,
Chris, I just want to talk about video games forever.
Alright, Josh.
Why don't we end this podcast?
Josh, we are running out of time for today, but if you want to come back on and we can just, like, you know, rant about more about your top 10 or random games like Speedrunner, which
top one game Speedrunner.
We will have a Speedrunner episode because that game is fantastic.
Oh, did you know John's getting Speedrunner?
I thought he already got it.
Oh no, he will. Yeah, he's gonna get it. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
that's what I last heard. All right,
but you know what? For today, guys, we are out. Have a good day, guys.